Please be seated. Again, we are going to have a series of Bible classes in here during Vacation Bible School time, and I need to tell you who we'll have coming just so you'll know. Craig Evans from the Spring Hill Church of Christ will be here tomorrow night. Kyle Bolton, who preaches for the Church Street Congregation in Lewisburg, will speak here Tuesday night. And then Wednesday night begins our summer series that we do every year on Wednesday nights. And Matthew Hyatt from the Burns Church of Christ in Burns, Tennessee, will be here. So if you can suffer through tonight, the rest of the week is going to be great. And I was thinking about that. I feel a little bit like, I feel a little bit like someone that spoke at the Fried Hardeman Lectureship when I was still in school. And I remember it because it was Sunday night. And Sunday night was the first lesson of a whole week full of lessons and lectureship. And so Bruce McCarty was the opening speaker. And he spoke. And then David Life, who was in charge of the lectureship, stood up. And we all knew what he wanted to say, which was, that was an outstanding lesson, and there will be more outstanding lessons to come. What he ended up saying was, thank you for that lesson, and don't worry, it's only going to get better from here. And so everybody sort of laughed when they figured out what he said, and if you ever knew David Life, it was funny to see him figure out what went on. And then he said, well, what I mean to say is, it won't get any worse. And then that didn't really help matters, so I guess that's my message tonight, is it won't get any worse throughout the week. We want you to be here and join us for all of those. As we think about what we'll be looking at tonight, serving at home, specifically coming out of John chapter 13, if you'd like to go ahead and turn there, we'll begin there. That covenant of love is something we're going to see on full display in John chapter 13. A few years ago, there was a 4-star general who started waiting tables at the White House. There was a White House dinner there, and Peter Chiarelli, who was a 4-star general, very high up in the ranks, was walking by a table where a woman named Valerie Jarrett was sitting, and all she saw were the stripes that were on the pants of his dress uniform, and they looked very similar to the stripes that were in the clothes the waiters were wearing. And so as he walked by her table, she turned around and asked him for a refill. There's a 4-star general, and instead of saying anything, he just sort of smiled, went away for a few minutes, came back with her refill order, and she'd been told about what had happened, about the communication, the miscommunication there, and she apologized profusely. And instead of being upset, he told her the mistake was okay, and he invited her over for dinner with his family. He said in a CNN interview, "It was an honest mistake that anyone could have made. She was sitting, and I was standing and walking behind her. All she saw were the 2 stripes on my pants, which are almost identical to the waiter's pants, really. She apologized, and will come to the house for dinner if we can work out a time in March." I thought that said something about someone who had a pretty high rank, but also had a pretty good attitude. Now, you might contrast that with a singer I read about last year who was going to meet her daughter at a really nice restaurant. She arrived first, and they told her she had to wait to be seated, to wait until her daughter came. Well, she didn't like that at all, so she marched to the place she thought she should sit, sat down, and refused to get up. Finally, the restaurant management had to come out and to say, "No, this is not the way we do things. You can't be here. You've got to wait on her." And she stormed out and caused a tremendous scene. Those are 2 differing examples that give us a pretty stark contrast as to what happens when we expect people to honor our rank, to honor our status. As human beings, we're pretty concerned with status. It matters to us. Our accomplishments matter to us. Our resumes matter to us. And if we're not careful, we could expect everyone to show a respect for our resume and for our status, and we can look around and see maybe some things that need to be done, but they're too menial for us to do. They're too small a task for us to really be responsible for. A few years ago, I was able to be a summer youth intern. It's been actually many years ago now because I was still in college. But I was able to be a summer youth intern, and one of our teens videoed the different events from the summer. And at the end of the summer, he showed the video, and we kind of saw some of the things that we'd done. And I noticed on one of those videos that we'd had an area-wide worship service where a lot of teens had come over, and we'd had dinner afterwards, and so there was a lot happening in the fellowship hall. And as the camera was panning around, it showed a group of students, and I was standing there, and we were talking and laughing. And in the background was one of our adult volunteers that, without drawing any attention to himself and without letting anybody know, was just sweeping up in the back. And I still remember thinking to myself, I never knew that he swept up after everything. I was there talking and having fun. He was sweeping up. I just turned around and saw that it had been done and never knew who did it. Someone told me about him in that congregation. They said there's no job too big for him to tackle, but there's no job too small for him to handle. Are there sometimes some jobs we think are just too small for us? I think that's an appropriate question to ask when we come to John chapter 13. Because we're at a point in Jesus' life and in his ministry where he knows the end of his time on earth is coming. He knows what's about to take place. It's something that he's already told his apostles is going to happen, even though they haven't quite been able to understand it. And as he's gathering with them, and it's Passover time and he's here, you can sense the urgency in so many of the things that Jesus does. If you knew you only had a few short days or even hours left on earth, what would you do? What would you emphasize? And so when we get to John chapter 13, I think we get something very important that Jesus wants us to know. And I'll begin reading in verse 1. We'll read the first 11 verses and then spend some time in this text tonight. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God, and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? Jesus answered him, What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterwards you will understand. Peter said to him, You shall never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I do not wash you, you have no share with me. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, The one who's been bathed does not need to wash except for the feet, but is completely clean. And you were clean, but not every one of you. For he knew who was to betray him, and that was why he said, Not all of you are clean. It's a beautiful picture, a beautiful scene in John chapter 13. And as we started our year, we spent time in this chapter thinking about our theme for the year, being here to serve. And as our children are in Vacation Bible School classes and craft rooms, they're going to be thinking about what it was like for Jesus to wash his disciples' feet. But I want us to stop for just a moment and to look at this from the aspect of our own lives. Because Jesus gives us an incredible model of humility and service. And just ask ourselves, if I'm looking at John 13, what do I need to do to have a John 13 kind of attitude in my life? What do I need to do if I'm going to serve? And tonight's theme for the children is serving at home, serving in our families. So we're going to think specifically about that. But there are several significant things that happen that I don't want us to overlook. The first thing that I think pops out to me is that Jesus gets up. I do think when we read John's account that posture is meaningful here. Because as we think about our own world, we might forget about the importance of standing and rank and posture for someone who is the master of the banquet. If you had someone who was putting together a dinner, putting together a meal, the master of the banquet would be seated. Now, servants might stand up and serve, but the master of the banquet would be there, would be reclined. That would be sort of a position of power. It was a position of authority. And so for Jesus to leave that position and to get up was putting him in the posture of a servant. Later on in verse 23, we find out that they were reclining at the table. Again, we don't normally eat this way. But likely, if they were reclining at the table, they would have had their feet pointed away from the center of the table. That would just be the most polite thing to do if you're in a setting like that. You don't want everybody's feet near the table, especially not where they walked. I've been able to have so many conversations with many of you who've been to Israel after getting back from my trip. And one of the things that Marybeth Gordon mentioned to me and I thought of while I was over there was, when you go over there, you find out why they needed to wash feet. Because you're walking through some areas, even if you're walking through a paved trail, it gets dusty very quickly and it's very hot. And so if you've walked a few miles, you can see why you would need to have your feet washed. Now, this was something that a servant would normally do. And so for Jesus to get up and to take on that role, I think it was very meaningful. And as we try to think about how that applies to our lives, I wonder if there aren't some areas of service where maybe we need to just be willing to get up. I try to picture what it would be like for all of the apostles to get in the room. Surely somebody knew that there wasn't a servant here. We don't read about a servant being here. Surely somebody thought, you know, we really ought to have our feet washed. Someone really ought to take care of this. But peers didn't wash each other's feet. That wasn't something that you did. And so you can imagine the apostles just sort of saying, you know, someone needs to do this. I don't know who needs. Someone needs to take care of this. And yet nothing happened. Can you imagine how it would have felt when Jesus starts to do that? Imagine they would have felt a little guilty that no one had thought of that. I don't know. I wasn't there. But can't you imagine they would have felt a little bit reluctant to have Jesus take on that role? Now, I'm sure this has never happened to us. But have you ever been standing around and you've thought, you know, someone really ought to do something about that? Maybe it's something that happens at church and you see a need that needs to be met and you think, you know, someone needs to take care of this. They really should do this. They really need to handle this somehow. There are times we need to just take the initiative, to be willing to get up and to do things ourselves and not think that a task is too small for us or too meaningful, menial, but just to say, you know, I'm going to take the first step. Even in our families, is there something that you wish were happening in your family right now? Is there something you wish was taking place? Is there a way you can take the initiative to make that happen? As a family, let's make it very personal. In my family, am I praying with my family the way that I should? Am I spending time in prayer, not just at mealtime, but in family devotionals? If that's not happening, could I take the initiative? Could I get up? And could I make that happen? Could I decide I'm going to do something about this? Maybe I think someone else should handle this. Maybe a wife is thinking, you know, the husband really should do this. And the answer is that he probably really should. But like any one of us, he needs help. I know I do. Need to be reminded, need to be encouraged to take the initiative. It may be something that we wish was happening in the lives of our children. Maybe we could take the initiative. Maybe we could start something. Maybe we could get with family, friends, and start a way of encouraging one another. Whatever it is, are we willing to get up? Because getting up and engaging with our family will require us doing several things. One of the things that will require us doing is looking up. I don't know if you've noticed, in the last few years, it's been fascinating to me. If you have traveled in the last 10 years, maybe even 15 years now, you've seen a noticeable difference. If you've walked into an airport as people are waiting on their flights, used to see you would have people's heads buried in newspapers or books, but now everyone's looking down here, and I do too. I'm right with you. And you've kind of got the posture of your phone's right here. You've got the two hands meeting in front right this and are looking and are checking email and are messaging people. It's almost addictive. It is addictive to be looking down. And I wonder sometimes if we're missing opportunities, even in our families, even at home. Can I tell you, it's a challenge sometimes to be at home and to be present with our families. Not just to be in the same room, all, you know, looking at different devices, but really to be connected, really to be present with them. I think it's a challenge. It's a challenge for me. And yet maybe I need to get up and make that happen. Maybe I need to take the initiative to look up, to engage, and to find ways to connect with others. Getting up and serving will require us looking up from what we're doing and putting others' needs above ourselves. I don't know if you've ever seen the TV show Everybody Loves Raymond. It's one of those that floats around a lot in reruns. But there's one episode that I caught about halfway through not too long ago where the husband, Ray, has come home from a trip and he has a suitcase. They have a suitcase full of dirty clothes and they have sort of a landing after a couple of steps and then long steps up to where the washing machine is. And he just leaves the suitcase there, assuming that his wife will take it upstairs. And she leaves it there because she's not going to take that upstairs. He needs to take it upstairs. He's the one who put it there. He needs to take it up to the washing machine. And he says she's the one that does the laundry. She needs to take it up there. And so there's sort of a silent standoff that goes on and on. And the whole episode is based around who's going to finally cave in and take care of something that needs to be taken care of. Who's finally going to drag that up the steps. I'm sure that's never happened at your house. But I think the reason that was funny is because it resonates with us. Because we've done that before. Well, maybe if I ignore it, you know, maybe she'll take care of that. Maybe he'll take care of that. And yet, sometimes we need to take the initiative and be willing to do that. Not only was he willing to get up, but he also took on a different role. He took on the role of a servant. I've already mentioned how important the idea of rank and honor was in that culture. But he's laying aside his outer garments. So to do this, he's taking off his outer garment. He would have been wearing what an average servant would have worn. And even before I think you had the shock of him wanting to wash their feet, I think you probably would have had a surprise that he would take off that outer garment and be willing to look like a servant. To be willing to look like a household servant that did household kinds of tasks. He takes a towel, ties it around his waist. And even though rabbis at the time taught that people should be humble and that humility was a good thing, rabbis also taught that students should honor the teacher. That students would venerate the rabbi. And so humility was a good thing, but the rabbis weren't necessarily wanting to serve their students. In the ancient Mediterranean world, cultures based on honor and shame, it was very important, someone's status, when you gave them a gift. That's one of the things we learn if you go to a country where honor and shame are very important. If you were to go to Thailand, for example, how you greet someone would vary depending on the age of that person and the respect you wanted to show. And so it's common to greet people with your hands like this. And if it was someone your age, your hands might be down here. But if it was someone who was older, you'd put your hands up higher. It's just a way of showing that you understand their status. And so for Jesus to do exactly the opposite of what culture would have said, not only would have shocked them, but it also would have set an example that rank and importance didn't matter for the apostles. More than once, the apostles argued over who was the greatest, didn't they? I mean, don't we see several times they're sort of trying to figure out who's the greatest, and James and John want to secure the seats on the right and left hand of Jesus, and people are arguing about that, and Jesus will catch them and correct them, and then it'll happen again. Here, he's showing them that that kind of moving around to try to get the right position is not the mindset a follower of Jesus would have. And he models humility. He is literally acting out what we read in Philippians chapter 2. When Paul writes, beginning in verse 4, let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus. And here's the attitude he wants them to have. Who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking on the form of a servant. Being born in the likeness of men and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. What is happening here, it's almost as if Jesus is embodying this text that would be written years later. That he's taking on the role of a servant. And it may be, if I'm going to serve others, I might need to start doing things that are unfamiliar to me. I may need to take on a role that's different for me. And maybe it's different than the way things worked in my family growing up. maybe I'm going to have to do things that if I'm a father, that my father didn't do quite the same way, or if you're a mother, that your mother didn't do quite the same way. Maybe things are going to work a little bit different if you're going to take the initiative to serve. It might be a new role. I mentioned earlier the trip we took to Israel, and one of the things you'll notice if you go there to Bethlehem, to the church of the Nativity, where they're honoring the birth of Jesus. Of course, it's a traditional site, but you have this building that's there. And if you look at this picture, there's the doorway that's called the Door of Humility. The reason it's called the Door of Humility is because they built it low enough during the Ottoman times that even if you were coming through on a cart, or if you were an important visitor that had a parade of people leading them through, you had to get out of what you were riding and duck down to walk inside. Every single person had to go through the Door of Humility. That was the idea. And I love that image of no matter who you are, you've got to get off the horse that you're riding, you've got to get off the carriage that you're in, and you've got to go through a doorway of humility. What would it be like if every morning we had to get up and go through a door that reminds us to be humble, that reminds us of the importance of humility? How would that change our relationships? How would that change the way that we live? We like the picture of being served, and sometimes even at home we like the picture of being served, but what would it change if I'm thinking of taking on the role of a servant? What would change this week? Not only did Jesus take on that role of the servant, but what's significant in this scene in John 13 is He served everyone. He served everybody who was there. And that matters because we know from reading the rest of the Gospels what these people would do. He would wash the feet of Judas. And the text we read told us that He knew what Judas was planning to do. He knew where he was planning to go. The feet that He was washing were going to go to betray Him, and yet Jesus still washed His feet. He washed the feet of Peter, and He knew where those feet were headed, even when Peter didn't. In fact, at the end of this chapter, He'll tell Peter what's going to happen. He'll tell Peter that you're going to deny Me three times. And it's interesting to read throughout the rest of John, there's a certain phrase that John uses twice. The phrase is charcoal fire. The first time John uses that phrase, charcoal fire, is in John 18 and verse 18, when Peter is standing around a charcoal fire and a servant girl comes up to him, asks if he's one of Jesus' disciples, and he denies it vehemently. The next time, the other time that's used in John, is all the way in John chapter 21. When Jesus is making a breakfast for His apostles, and they come, and as they have breakfast, and as Jesus talks with His apostles, He asks Peter three times, "Do you love Me?" And Peter has a chance, in a way, to make up for the three denials that he gave. I think that's interesting. Two charcoal fires. And Peter has the ability to be able to say out loud that he loves Jesus. But Jesus knew exactly what was going to happen, and He still washed Peter's feet. And typically we give Judas and Peter the hardest times out of all of them, but the feet of every single one of those apostles was going to run in the opposite direction when Jesus was crucified. When Jesus is betrayed and arrested, very likely after He's crucified, the apostles are thinking to themselves, if they could do that to Jesus, they might do that to us. And they're meeting behind locked doors, and they don't know what to do. Jesus understood all of those things when He washed their feet. And I think that has implications for us. There might be people we don't like to serve, but God calls us to serve them anyway. Even in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus would say, what good is it if you love those who love you? Don't even Gentiles do that? Doesn't everyone do that? People will always treat others well that treat them well, but what about those who are hard to serve? And we're thinking about families. Maybe there are family members that are hard to serve. Maybe you have a family member that's hard to serve. Maybe you've been thinking about that family member as we've been talking about service. You can probably think of that. All of us can have an individual in our families that's really hard to get along with and that we really struggle with. And if you think you don't have one in your family, I've got news. That person is you. You're the person who's hard to get along. I mean, if we think we don't have one, you might be the one. All of us have an individual that's going to be tough for us to deal with, but we're still called to serve that person. The same is true in church families. We'll have brothers and sisters in Christ we have a hard time getting along with. That's human nature. But we're called to love and to serve each other anyway. Jesus wasn't only serving those who would be true to him. He was serving all of them. And then a kind of focus that we maintain, I think, is also important. Because what Jesus does here in John 13, at the beginning, depending on your translation, it may say that Jesus loved them to the end or to the fullest extent. He showed them the full extent of his love. The full extent of Jesus' love is this act of service, but his love and the extent of his love didn't stop here. He continued to serve. He continued to pray. And if you read through John's Gospel, Jesus is praying, and he prays for himself, but he's also praying for his followers, for his disciples. And then he goes through this mockery of a trial and a crucifixion and the ultimate example of service and showing the full extent of his love. The service didn't stop when the basin was empty and when all the feet were washed. Jesus continued that humble service. And so for me, that service can't stop after a vacation Bible school is over, or after a worship service is over and I think, boy, that's a powerful text and that's really tough and I probably need to do better. And then I've thought about something else before I'm even out of the parking lot. That attitude of service should continue. And so that focus is going to be necessary. I'm going to have to live in a way that shows the focus of service for the rest of my life. Peter struggled with this. We see when we get to the book of Galatians that even though Peter has been so faithful, when there are some Gentile Christians that are around and some Jewish Christians that are around, Peter's keeping those Gentile Christians at arm's length. He's still struggling with this idea of serving people that are different. He's still allowing those differences to come between him and what he knows God wants him to do. And so we know that's going to be a struggle for us. But we'll need to get up, take initiative. Take on the role of a servant. It might be different for us. It might be hard for us. It could be a challenge. But if we do that prayerfully, serve everyone, no matter if they're easy to serve or not, and we maintain that kind of focus, we'll be living out the kind of servant leadership that Jesus shows here. And our life will be marked by service to him. Civil War history tells about a soldier named Roswell McIntyre who deserted the Union Army. He was found and he was court-martialed and he was sentenced to death. And his only defense was that he deeply regretted his actions. He was very sorrowful, very penitent for that. His mother wrote to Abraham Lincoln. He wrote to Abraham Lincoln, and he wrote a phrase in his letter that said if he were pardoned, that he would, quote, play the man. In other words, I'll do my part. I'll be the man that I need to be. And so Abraham Lincoln did pardon him. And he gave him a pardon that said, upon the condition that he returned to his regiment and faithfully served out his term, making up for lost time or until otherwise lawfully discharged, he is fully pardoned for any supposed desertion heretofore committed. This paper is his pass to go to his regiment. If you were to go to the National Archives in Washington, D.C. today, you could read that pardon. And you could read it because it was found on the body of Roswell McIntyre at the Battle of Five Forks, Virginia, in 1865. In other words, he came back and did what he said he would do. He served. And he served his army faithfully. And in one of the final battles of the Civil War is when he finally gave his life for the cause that he had committed to. I think it's interesting to see that phrase, I would play the man, I would do things differently, I would do what I'm supposed to do. And the way in which he lived that out gave proof that he was serious. It's easy for me to say I want to do better serving. But our challenge tonight is, what will we do? How will people be able to look at us and say there's a difference? And say that we're living differently. Peter didn't understand why Jesus would wash his feet. And he made that statement that he didn't want that to happen. And then Jesus said, if you don't do this, unless you're washed, you'll have no part of me. And then Peter makes sure that he doesn't want to be separated from Jesus. When we read through the New Testament, we read that the message of Jesus is for everyone and that his invitation is to all of us. But we need to be washed. In this case, and what Scripture says, we put Christ on in baptism. And so we have that opportunity tonight. We have that chance every time we gather together, but we want to share the invitation that God gave to us. If you'd like to become a child of God, if you'd like to put Christ on in baptism, or maybe there's a need that you have, a way that we could pray for and encourage you, we ask that you would please come as we all stand and as we worship together in song.
I was sinking deep in sin, far from the peaceful shore, very